Okay, I call to order the House Committee on Education for the 20th of February, 2017. The first thing we're going to start out with is with an informational hearing. As I was telling the young adults that are here, we cannot have a House Education Committee without having a presentation by what I refer to as the REAP kids. So with that, I'm going to open an informational meeting on REAP student leadership. And so this is an opportunity for us to learn more about the REAP student leadership program that we have. And so we're going to have like the kind of three panels of people. And don't worry about testifying. Just want to make sure that you identify yourself. So we're going to start out with Kaylee and Daniel. And then we will move on to the other folks. Okay? Or Daniel.
Thank you all, Chair. I appreciate this opportunity to be here. My first time speaking with REAP, being a part of REAP. It's been great so far this year. REAP is a year-round
multicultural. And if you want to identify yourself for the record, because we know who you are, the television.
My name is Daniel Shelton. I'm a REAP ambassador with REAP, site coordinator at Centennial High School. And again, this is my first year with REAP. REAP is a year-round multicultural youth leadership program committed to empowering the next wave of leaders. Since 2001, REAP has emerged as one of the extremely youth development program models in the state of Oregon. Our program staff works in schools and engages all students to be the global leaders through leadership development, cooperative management, civic engagement, entrepreneurship, and youth voice. Commonly known for our ability to engage students and develop their leadership potential, REAP has become a resource to business leaders, educators, elected officials, community advocates, and parents. REAP brings students into a community of learning and leadership through programs that proactively engage, ignite, and elevate students' voice and enhance school climate. The mission of REAP is to proactively ignite, elevate, and engage the next wave of leaders for the future now. Our pipeline for leadership development starts as young as elementary schools and continues into post-secondary and career. So to learn more about REAP, you can also go to our website, which is www.reapusa.org. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you have any questions for Mr. Shelton?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Is Ms. Self speaking also? Or
she is running behind.
Okay.
So it's just me and the rest of our REAP ambassadors.
Great. Well, thank you very much
thank
for your
you.
Testimony. The next panel that we have coming up, we've got Cache, Selena, and Simone. And if you guys want to come up and don't be nervous, because these are very nice people up here. Well, most of them.
Why did you look at me when you said that?
And just make sure when you're speaking that you identify yourself for the record.
Okay, well, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Okay. Good afternoon. I'm Kaisha Marshall, and I'm a junior REAP ambassador at Centennial High School. REAP has opened my eyes to various opportunities.
Yeah, if you could just sit back just a little. Perfect, right there.
Okay. REAP has opened my eyes to various opportunities as to the luncheon back in September at the Doubletree Hotel. I got to meet the mayor and other government officials, and it was a really good opportunity. Another event that I really enjoyed was the event a couple months ago at the convention center, where I got to walk around and meet people from different occupations. I got to also meet people from my future occupation. I want to be a nurse, and they helped me, like, gave me tips on, like, how to, like, go about what I want to be. As of now, I'm here at the Oregon State Capitol talking to the House of Education, and nobody really gets to do that, you know, so it's, like, a really good opportunity. And I like that you guys want to, like, hear our voices and, like, how REAP helps us. REAP has also helped me with my leadership skills. It's helped me become more fluent in my work in my everyday life of getting ready for my future. Another example is I need 1.5 credits to graduate after this year, so like they're helping me of like giving me more information of colleges and like how to write college essays and stuff like that. It's a great program and I love being in it. It's definitely opened up my eyes more, and I'm glad to have these guys helping me get prepared for my future.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Simone Willingham. I'm a freshman REAP ambassador at Centennial High School. REAP has helped me build up my leadership skills and helping me with my oral, because I don't really do good with speeches. And it's helping me by making the right decisions in situations that I would be in or that I don't want to be in. REAP is something that anyone can join and be a part of. This is why I'm part of it. I enjoy our meetings every Monday because it's not like Sun School. We actually try to figure out ways to make our society better, and we talk about current events that are happening and how they impact us. So REAP is helping me become a better leader and a better person in general. REAP also helped me with my interview tactics and helping me with job applications for internships and working. They give me confidence. It's what they do. REAP is a place where they are open to new opportunities and we are open to new ideas on things that we don't do already.
Okay, that's great. Do we have any questions for the panelists? Okay, for the first time, you did an excellent job. Thank you very much. And the next folks that we're going to have up is Selena coming up, or?
No, it will be.
We've got Taye and Jordan and.
Kinde.
Thank you.
Yes. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome. Gonna have to flip a coin.
Good afternoon, representatives. Hi, my name is Kende Timothy. I am a sophomore REAP ambassador at David Douglas High School. I decided to enroll in the REAP program because I met great people. I was in the eighth grade at Ron Russell Middle School when a then site coordinator named Zanel came and asked me if I wanted to join a club called REAP. I was skeptical at the time, but she lured me with pizza. In REAP, we talked about making our school a better place. We talked about real-world problems and overall becoming a leader in our school and community. It was a safe environment that allowed me to voice my opinion and share my experience. This is why I decided to join REAP. The REAP program has benefited my life in many ways. After attending the Summer Challenge Academy, I was open to different occupations. Though I want to be a pharmacist, it allowed me to explore other options. It also made me happy to see people who were the same color as me. This is really important because representation of my race matters to me.
Thank you. Okay.
Good afternoon, representatives. I am Taya Timothy, and I'm a sophomore REAP ambassador at David Douglas High School. I've been to REAP for about 4 years now, and it has been a great experience. Being in this program has exposed me to a lot of different opportunities and showed me how to network with different people. I attend the annual REAP Challenge Academy every year, and this last year I got a chance to meet a few entrepreneurs and CEOs. And one thing I took away from that experience was that anyone can start a business, but it takes the right mindset and the right connections with people. It was also nice to see people of color in leadership positions. This made me realize that your right mindset can affect your outcome positively or negatively. This information encouraged me to work hard and think positively. Overall, REAP teaches students how to be great leaders and encourages self-identity. Since I've been a part of REAP, I've met so many amazing people and learned about what I can do to impact my future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the microphone. one. Thank you.
My name is Jordan Coleman, and we have our Aloha students here now, and I was wondering if it's okay if they share their story or if you wanted to continue on.
Sure. Do they want to come up in a separate panel, or are we going to bring their chairs over?
Oh, they could be a separate panel.
Okay, we'll do a separate panel if we'll just have a few more to
okay.
that want to speak.
Kaylee? So you guys want to go sit back down. You guys can sit right here.
And then we want to make sure that we get these two folks' names down.
Yes, okay. Definitely.
Thank you.
Make sure before you speak, say your name first.
Okay.
You
want to
go speak first?
No. hi, my name is Luis Mile Perez.
Hi, Luis. How are you?
I am good. Thank you. How are you?
Good. I'm very good today. It's a Monday. Do you want to tell us all about the REAP program, or are you just here to introduce yourself? We don't bite much up here, so.
Well, okay. I already got one of them done. So anyways, what REAP is mainly all about is teaching students leadership skills they can use later on in life, in college, jobs, any sort of life experience where it comes to building skills. And what it can do for me mainly is meeting people that I never thought I'd be able to meet before and being more out there, more social, and really building those social skills at the same time learning how to be a better leader and to represent yourself and others.
That's good. I like that. Something you want to tell us?
Hi. I'm Aaliyah Murphy. I'd like to say that REAP has kind of given me an opportunity to meet people that I normally wouldn't meet, and given me, you know, it shows me that because sometimes I can have problems in school and I don't really have someone to talk about it because I don't have someone who goes through the same experience as I do. This club has kind of given me, you know, people who know how I feel. So it's very good that I'm in this program because I can get things out that normally I wouldn't be able to do.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Y'all done? Thank
Madam
you very
Chair.
Much. Oh, wait, but before you guys go, any questions of this panel?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
They'll ask very nice questions.
Jordan.
Yes.
I just wanted to know what REAP stands for. Because I heard someone say, I'm a REAP, mm-hmm. and then I've heard others talk about the program. What does it stand for?
So, REAP, what they were saying that they were REAP ambassadors.
Okay.
But REAP itself is the next wave of leaders. So the actual lettering in REAP mm-hmm. doesn't stand for anything. Our just tagline is the next wave of leaders. And our mission statement is to proactively ignite, elevate, and engage the next wave of leaders for the future now.
Very good. Yeah. Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you. No problem.
Representative Solman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to say, too, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate because listening to you certainly does give us, excitement for our future with having kids like you that are involved in the schools and, engaging other students in their education. So I was curious about how old can one start in the REAP program?
Mm-hmm.
I got
it. Okay. I think it can start off from the beginning, personally. Now, me, I joined REAP this year. I remember going, it was during a club rush at my school for Aloha, and, you know, it's, depending on the school you go to, doesn't matter what age you are, you can be an elementary fifth grader or a senior in high school, because if you build up those leadership skills at a young age, and you keep progressing more and more and more, it'll only make you a stronger leader as you go forward.
Right. I would like to add to that. I'd say that if I had this program while I was in elementary school, that it probably would have helped me prevent certain situations that got me into trouble. Mm-hmm. And I probably wouldn't have, like, things that aren't good to have when you're in high school. So
okay.
I think we should definitely have it in elementary school.
Okay.
Thank you. And I'll close with that, Jordan Coleman. So REAP actually starts from third grade up to high school. Our middle schools and high schools have what's called our solutions program, which is the leadership development curriculum. But in our third grade programs, we have what's called reflections, where we have that preventative conflict resolution program where students who are on the verge of suspension will come into a two-day program as young as third grade, and our REAP staff will mentor these youth for these 2-day periods to have a restorative justice effect, mm-hmm. where it's, we identify the problem, how can we prevent it from happening mm-hmm. next time? And if you can see some of our data, the disciplinary rates have dropped tremendously amongst our REAP students. So yeah, third to 12th grade would answer your question.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was curious, can you tell me what school districts all?
Yes. So I actually have a piece where I was going to close out our talk. But currently we are in Centennial School District, David Douglas School District, Portland Public Schools, and Beaverton. I always want to say Aloha School District.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions of this panel?
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you so very much for being here. Do we have anyone else speaking?
Yes, I'm.
Yes.
Our,
is that young lady.
We have one more time? One more student?
One more.
Awesome.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Come on over. Did you want to sit?
Okay.
Do you want to say your name first?
Yeah, you guys ready? And you want to make the microphone mm-hmm. a little closer to her.
Hi, my name is Selena. I'm a student in fifth grade, and I'm a REAP ambassador for Park Lane Elementary School. I enrolled in REAP because I knew that it would do something to help our school, and I knew that there was nice people and people that were respectful. REAP is making a difference in my life because it shows me how to solve and avoid conflicts. It also shows me how to be patient and respectful towards others, which will make me a better leader in school.
Excellent.
And hi there, my name is Kaylee Self. I'm the site coordinator for Park Lane Elementary School, which is located in Centennial School District.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of this panel? Okay, well, I thank the REAP kids very much for coming. And what we're gonna do is we're gonna close out the informational hearing, and we're gonna stand at ease for about a minute and a half.
She wanted to say
something.
I'm sorry.
I will reopen the informational hearing.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. Again, we got stuck in traffic and finding kids. So I appreciate you guys' time. My name, again, is Jordan Coleman, and I'm the program administrator for REAP. So I assist our director of programs, Nate Golden, in overseeing the 10 school sites that we are now established at. So today you've heard a few of our REAP ambassadors' personal stories and how REAP has made an impact in their lives. And we couldn't have done it, of course, without REAP staff, the support of our partnering schools, and the grant funded by ODE. So as you all may know, REAP is a grantee of the House Bill 2016, and it currently, of course, supports the success rates of our African and Black students in our school districts. And we've been able to expand our programming this year. So last year, we were only in David Douglas School District and PPS, but like I said, we're now in Centennial and Beaverton. And with this expansion, it's given us the opportunity to reach out to a lot more students and for a lot more students to share their success stories being a part of REAP. And with that said, I'm sure we can all agree that the biggest impacts are seen with time. And currently, because the House Bill 2016 is new, we'd like to continue sustaining this funding so that we are able to see and physically see the impacts that we have, not only just within this year, within the course of the next 3 years. And now that we've been in the high school and 2 elementary schools in Centennial School District, our middle schools in that school district now want REAP. And Beaverton now wants to have REAP in all the elementary schools and middle schools. So we're very excited for our district's enthusiasm about having REAP. But again, we would like your support in sustaining the funding for it. This year, we've done a great job building relationships with our partnering schools and staff, and adjusting our programming to meet the needs of our school is also important. REAP focuses and values the importance of equity. Currently, Centennial and Beaverton do not have any programs that focuses on our Black community.
REAP is the sole community organization serving these districts, and there are shared agreements between district and REAP to expand, like I just mentioned. And then lastly, I want to stress the importance of your support with the Senate Bill 803, which provides grants to school districts to be able to provide these community partnerships, and then also Senate Bill 183 that will use an equity lens to assist our students to provide them with the necessities to be able to prep them to leave high school and then go on to college. And then finally, the Measure 98, the High School Graduation and College and Careers Act, we actually sat down with Colt Gill not too long ago to speak with him, for him to collect our voice and how we would like that report to look, and assisting our REAP students and making sure it's impactful to our students. So again, on behalf of REAP staff and students, we really appreciate your time. Thank you for the leniency and flexibility today, and we hope to see you again next year.
Okay, thank you very much. We appreciate that. So with that, we will close the informational hearing. We're actually going to stand at a public hearing, actually on two bills close together. I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2219 and House Bill 2229. And I would like to call up Representative Wisnett, and then also Alethea, if you could tell us what the bill is.
Yeah, Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 2219 requires school districts and public charter schools offer students sufficient courses in civics. This bill takes effect on July 1st, 2018 for the 2018-19 academic year. No revenue and fiscal impact statement have been issued yet. There is a Dash 1 amendment that changes the requirement that school districts and public charter schools offer courses in civics to encouraging they offer that course. House Bill 2229 modifies the common curriculum goals, performance indicators, and diploma requirements set by the State Board of Education to now include financial literacy, requires school districts and public charter schools to include financial literacy instruction with the current core subjects. Bill takes effect on July 1st, 2018 for the 18-19 academic year. May have a revenue and fiscal impact, but those have not been issued yet. There is a Dash 1 amendment also available on OLIS, which changes the requirement that school districts and public charter schools offer these courses in financial literacy to now encouraging that districts offer these courses.
Okay, thank you. Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Honorable Committee members. Thank you for hearing House Bill 2219 and House Bill 2219 and 2229 today. Impressive testimony the committee heard before. I think Representative Hernandez and Representative Parrish Knight, we talked about that in the Ways and Means Committee today, funding programs like this. That's what will help improve our graduation rate with young people like this coming up. So look, very impressed. For the record, Madam Chair, I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative for House District 53. I'm here today to ask you to please pass these two bills related to civics and financial literacy for our public school students. This has been and remains a legislative priority for me. I believe it was 2005 I submitted bills to add one half unit of civics and one half unit of financial literacy back as required for graduation. They used to be. My bills were not approved due to the opposition stating it was an unfunded requirement. I continued working on ways to provide this important education to our young people. The Oregon State Board of Education, I think it was Duncan Wise, helped do this. They did add as an essential skill level for graduation requirements, civics. What this means is students must in some manner demonstrate civics knowledge. If you look at the bills, look at the first one in civics, you'll see where it lists civics as an essential skill level. I believe it's on line 10. Those are essential skill levels. It has civics, okay? And the only thing else we're changing in 219 then, which is existing, is the paragraph on the back page that school districts and public charter schools are encouraged to offer students courses in civics. So that's the only thing the bill does, 219. Now, 229 actually puts in the essential skill level, the financial literacy where civics was before. That's on line 19 and 27 and 40. We've now put financial literacy next to civics. And then the last paragraph, again, I realize that this is not the session to require anything, so it's highly encouraged. Would make me feel good if we do at least put that in there, and then school districts, so we'll put that on their, you know, hope list or nice to have list. Again, as the intent of these two bills is to encourage school districts to offer courses and other educational opportunities in civics and financial literacy for every student who wants to receive this education. Madam Chair and honorable colleagues, I could speak for a significant time on why civics and financial literacy is important. I've got all sorts of articles about how bad we are and all that and what other states are trying to do. I'm going to assume that this committee agrees with me that both of these topics are important to the education of our students and for their follow-on to be great, good citizens. So I'm going to spare you the time of that. I'm not even going to quote Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, who's a big supporter of civics. She actually has an online course to learn civics. Florida and Illinois are doing some civics initiatives and things like that. I'm going to spare the committee that time. And I've got testifying today people that are very knowledgeable on this subject. I think we're going to have at least two ladies from the credit unions and one gentleman from the banking community testify in support of the financial literacy bill. They provide a great option for school districts, financial literacy education options. So if a teacher doesn't want to do it, they could have a financial night or weekend or a week and talk about financial literacy. Madam Chair, I'll conclude that and bail for any questions.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? There have been amendments put in that urge or...
changes from, Madam Chair, yes, changes from required or directs. New committee, members of the House, the summary never changes once your bill goes in. The summary, if you read that, says it does not, may not reflect the intent of the bill. So it went from direct to encourage.
Yes. So. Thank you very much. Questions of the representative, Representative Solomon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would say, yes, I absolutely agree that both of these subjects are important to our youth. And I also would say that on a financial literacy part, I know that in Hillsboro that we have a course called Financial Algebra that actually takes in the algebra course and provides opportunities for students to learn how they do a down payment on house, how they pay for their school, and all this great component to real-life math. So we'd love to be able to look more into this to see if that meets a math requirement, if that's an actual towards 1 year of math, because that is absolutely, it is important for our students to understand all these aspects to move themselves into their future. So support this as
Madam
well.
Madam Chair and Representative Solomon, I agree completely. I think I mentioned in here it can be an elective, because I did find in visiting schools over the last 13 years that some schools have it as an elective. Some schools even may have it. I cannot confirm this, that some schools may require it as a graduation requirement. As you know, there's 24 units required for an Oregon school diploma, but school districts can add to that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's all sorts of ways. And when it's essential skill level, I actually last year introduced a bill that didn't go anywhere that said one of the ways that we could demonstrate the essential school level of civics was to have all of our students successfully pass the citizenship test.
Thank you, because I know Tigard High School has financial literacy as an elective. Yeah. And I actually taught financial literacy, if you can believe it, back in the olden days. It used to be a state requirement. So anyway, any other questions of Representative McLean?
I just wanted to thank you for the amendments to encourage this year, since mm-hmm. we're in such a tight budget year, because I think putting any more requirements on schools is a very difficult thing to do. And I also appreciate the fact that you're giving them some creativity on how they might deal with these two particular suggestions. And that, as you point out, there are many types of programs, whether they be semester, graduation, or workshops, that could be added to their school experience and allow for students who particularly need or want, or for all students to experience this type of education. So thank you very much.
Madam Chair and Representative, thank you.
Any other questions of the representative? Representative Parrish.
Thanks. Representative Wisnett, do you have any sense of how well or not well the Civic Scholars program is going? So we passed that legislation a couple years ago. We put a little bit of funding to that. We all get the chance to send a couple teachers from our district to a workshop thing, and they're supposed to go back to their schools and teach civics.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Parrish, I've sent students from my district every time to that, and it was a good bill. And it was trying to, again, and this is something that maybe the school district could look at this bill to say, again, that as Representative McClain said, there's all sorts of ways you could do it instead of just having a class for 6 months or whatever. You could do a weekend or special weekend or something like that. I think it's very important. I think you could even put some parallelism between it and the housing crisis that people haven't really learned. And now we have our 12-year-olds and 10-year-olds with cell phones and how much that costs and things like that. So I think it's a good bill. I hope that the bill passes. It'll give the school districts some attention that they'd want to do more than they're doing now and not put a mandate on them so the bill doesn't pass.
I think Representative Parrish wishes the teachers that are having. Yeah. And I know that the Classroom Law Project, the civics thing, they came in December. And what the bill is that every House and Senate district can have two teachers out of their area to come to a civics day here in the Capitol. And they had that in December, and we had many more teachers than we had the year before, just because last time there was a very narrow window to inform people. But this year there were far more people that came
to the civics day. I just wonder how that's translating actually to, you know, what's happening in the classroom.
I think an awful lot of those people, actually, just that one day, Representative Hack and myself were invited out to Whitaker Middle School, and we went out to that one. I've been out to probably four or five or six different schools from there, so it has translated into more engagement by the educators to bring people in. Representative.
Well, I wanted to thank Representative Parrish for that question, though, because I think it is important for us to look at the dollars that are going out the door and making sure that they are, you know, that we think they're the best use this year. And I would make one comment to somebody who can get it to the right person. When they put it on December 4th or whatever that weekend is right in there, it ends up being on end of the semester work sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I had two really great people that came on from Forest Grove High School and from the charter school in Forest Grove. They loved it in 2015, but there was a little bit difference in their particular school end of the semester grading activities.
We will let them know.
So please try to make sure that that's on a weekend where they're not losing their grading time to come to it, because they were saying we have to stay. We invited 10 people and they all were going to be doing grades that day.
Yep. Mm. Okay. No, we will pass that on.
And thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Now, putting the two bills together. Thank you very much. I appreciate you bringing this forward. Now, we have two different bills, and so what we're going to be hearing from are, we have two people signed up for 2219, which is the civics bill. And so it was Peter Fitzgerald and Greg Burrell. Did you want to testify on this bill?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative. Okay, if you guys want to come up and...
I'm going to defer my testimony.
Okay. And you're Mr. Fitzgerald, because I know Greg. Okay.
Just give me a moment. Okay, I'm not sure how you do this, but my name is Greg Burrell, B-U-R-R-I-L-L. And Madam Chair, representatives, I signed up to testify as neutral on this bill. And before I say anything about the bill, first of all, I'd like to thank you all for your service. And some of you, thank you for being generous with your time to share your views on education with me. And I hope to speak with the rest of you sometime during this session. I signed up on this to be neutral on this bill first, because I have important reasons why I might support it and important reasons why I might oppose it. I hear so many great ideas in education, but I worry that most great ideas fail without adequate revenue, adequate teacher and administrator buy-in, and the ideas being embedded in a functioning system. So here, in these times, civic education, in my opinion, would best be done in elementary and middle schools because younger children are most likely to teach their parents. It's the parents who have the right to vote, the responsibility to tell their representatives how they want their tax dollars spent, and hopefully the motivation to spend their energy connecting with those who represent them rather than arguing with people with different political opinions on Facebook. See, children are learning machines. What they think is important, they learn and remember. If they thought civics was important, we wouldn't have to mandate teaching it. Our society teaches children that sports, film, and music are the most important. I know that some of you have seen pictures of the deplorable conditions in our schools, the overcrowding. You don't find that in sports arenas. You don't find that in movie theaters, and you don't find it in concert venues. So children learn what's important. Then there are kids who are lucky enough to have parental support to ensure they master the necessary skills even when the education system can't provide it, good enough health care to be able to participate fully in school, and they're the ones that grow up to learn that what's really important is business numbers, how much profit they're making, how the stock market is doing, and so on and so forth. So I'm really hoping that you will do something for education that will teach children that education is important to them. Because when they look at their school buildings, when they look at their class sizes, and when they look at the amount of money you're willing to spend, they must conclude that it's not really that important.
Fine, thank you. Any questions?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Greg, very much for testifying. Okay, and then we also had since we opened them concurrently, some people that want to speak on House Bill 2229, which is the financial literacy or civics?
Financial literacy.
Financial literacy. And so, Mr. Fitzgerald, did you want to speak or? And then we'll have Pam Levitt and the second person. You want to make sure you identify yourself for the record.
Sure. It's also the first time I've done this. I'm Peter Fitzgerald, Fitzgerald. 45 years in education, mostly in special education, grandparent of five children. Parent of three children. When I started teaching, used to be called personal finance. It was in the schools. I watched that go. Also watched shop classes and automotive technology classes and metal shop and horticulture classes go by the wayside in deference to the Common Core. I watched my own adult children struggle with financial literacy. I want my grandchildren to have the opportunity to learn financial literacy. My educational professional career has been spent teaching young adults with disabilities financial literacy, but it's not part of the opportunity for all kids to learn those kinds of skills. So I just encourage you to support that bill, and I'll take any questions.
Okay, fine. Any questions, Mr. Fitzgerald? Okay, thank you very much
for
testifying. Okay, so we have Pam Levitt, and is it Amanda?
Amanda.
And then after that, next panel, we'll have Mr. Martinez.
Good afternoon, members of the committee, Chair Doherty. My name is Pam Levitt, and I represent the Northwest Credit Union Association. I do not have the opportunity to come before House Education, so I'm honored to be here today. What a special day for me to hear the students from REAP. I am a graduate of David Douglas High School, and how proud I am that they could come in. There's no way when I was a high school student I could have come and done this. So it was a great day to listen to them. As you know, credit unions are not-for-profit financial financial cooperatives. There are 65 credit unions, state and federally chartered in Oregon, with 2 million Oregonians as members. I submitted 5 pages of testimony to you on financial education, which I am not going to read today, but it is a passion of Oregon credit unions, and I hope you do take a look at it. Just the first page and a half is my testimony, and then I included an article that I thought was important, and then Friday afternoon, I quickly got a survey of a bunch of credit unions on the work that they're doing, but I could tell you that every credit union in Oregon is working on financial education. Financial literacy became a top priority for ours when personal finance was taken out of schools, and credit union staff work in the area of financial education. Many of our credit unions run high school credit unions. We're teaching in the classroom. We're providing after-school workshops, and there's examples that I could go on, and Amanda's more of an expert, and I'll let her do it. In the legislature, we've worked extremely hard, along with Representative Wisnett, and then Senator Rick Metzger, who was also a leader on this issue. We've been working on this issue since 2005, worked on the Civics and Financial Literacy Task Force, and also worked on legislation in 2012. We certainly want to support efforts. We really do understand the challenges that school districts and teachers have with curriculum, so we do want to support the efforts to encourage, and we'll certainly support the amendment. We recognize that that there are many challenges to our school districts, and so we want to support the idea of bringing financial education as a priority for parents, students, and policymakers. Finally, I just want to say that's in my testimony, a society of financial illiterate consumers who can avoid scams, predatory lenders, and the enticement of overspending will never emerge without financial education in our schools. So it's a passion for Oregon credit unions. We're out there on the front lines, and I'd like to turn it over to someone who is on the front lines. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you. Good afternoon, Chair Doherty and members of the Education House Committee on Education. My name is Amanda Brenneman Brown, and I am the Community Education Director of the 98,000-member Oregon State Credit Union, state chartered, and based in Corvallis. I am here today to share information with you highlighting what our credit union does in our state to teach financial literacy. Creating financial solutions to make lives better is the vision of Oregon State Credit Union, where education is not only a priority, but is also one of our core values. Financial education is one of the ways we fulfill our commitment to remain a sustaining resource in the communities that we serve. When it comes to financial literacy, the needs are great and only growing. Requests continue to increase, coming in from teachers as well as community partners seeking our financial education programming and resources. We have taught financial education in 22 schools located in Benton, Plain, Lincoln, Lynn, Marion, Polk, Tillamook, and Washington counties. We have also taught at McLaren, the youth correctional facility in Woodburn. In 2016, our programming benefited 8,800 youth in grades K through 12, providing 309 financial education presentations. Compared with 2015, this represents a 5% increase in the presentations facilitated and an 18% increase in the youth served. Financial literacy basics represent the topics most frequently requested. These topics often are taught as a series and include saving, budgeting, account management, paychecks, checking and checkbook management, wise use of credit, debt management, and identity theft prevention. In addition, we sponsor and coordinate with Junior Achievement throughout a longstanding partnership with Oregon State University's College of Business. This programming further expands youth exposure to work readiness, entrepreneurship, and financial literacy. We also bring financial education to other settings outside of the traditional classroom. An example of this is the partnership with the Albany Chamber of Commerce. We taught financial education to local high school students at their job fair, Career Day, held at Lynn Benton Community College. There were 6 sessions conducted, averaging 275 students per session. Additionally, requests for financial reality fairs have been gaining momentum. Financial reality fairs are interactive financial literacy tools for high school students that create an opportunity for students to experience some of the financial challenges they will face when they start on their own life. Our partnership with Willamette Education Service District has provided opportunities to reach youth through these fairs at Jervis, Tillamook, Neocony, Forest Grove, and Staten High Schools in the last 6 months. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today, for your time and your public service to the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of the panelists? Representative Solomon?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say thank you so much. It's very exciting to hear about your partnership with the ESDs. When I think about opportunities that you may be able to provide for, like, web programs, you know, web access, you know, for programs for maybe for our rural districts, mm-hmm. how important that would be. It is great that you're utilizing that partnership with ESD. But this is fantastic that you're doing this because, you know, so much – although financial literacy and as well as civics are so important, teachers feel a complete strain on their day as to all that they need to be able to fit into such a shortened school day. And so I appreciate looking at having these opportunities for folks of industry to come in and say, we've got this. Mm-hmm. Let us show you how we can partner with you to help you. I know that I work with someone who is a CFO that is also involved in some sort of program that goes into a school, mm-hmm. the school districts as well. I think she's worked with Quatama Elementary. But I think this is fantastic, and I really appreciate all your efforts because the more that we can reach out, and especially with those in the elementary age, the more that we can do that, the better we are for helping them for their future and helping them plan. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, any other? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, how do you typically, what is the process that occurs to get into a school? Does the school call up the local credit union and say, hey, can you help me? Do you send out stuff? Do you knock on the door? How does that begin?
Do you want to start?
Mm-hmm. Chair Doherty and Representative Springer, thank you for your question. A lot of it is word of mouth. And so when I came into this role a little over a year ago, there were already very well-established relationships. I picked up where my predecessor left off, and now it's been a lot of word of mouth. So we don't do any marketing outside of our walls to say, hey, we have this as a free service to your schools or your organizations. They just contact us. We facilitate the classes and to fulfill their needs and what they're looking for. We definitely make sure that we identify the objectives and we can come through on what they're looking to have in their classroom.
May I follow up, Madam
Yes,
Chair?
Please.
I don't know now that my question is as relevant as I thought maybe it was. Are there instances where you have reached out to schools and been told no for probably very good reasons, mm-hmm. but have you been told no?
I have. It's been one relationship comes to mind that we have been with them for the last 9 years, and they said that there were some administrative changes and they had some curriculum changes and they just wouldn't be able to add it onto their plate for this year, and they said come back next year. And that happens. Many of the cases we don't get no's because they come to us and say, hey, we're looking for this, and we're able to provide that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay, next up, Mr. Martinez. Thank you. Twice in one day.
I'm a lucky man. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association and the Independent Community Banks of Oregon. I don't often testify before the Education Committee, so it's a pleasure to be here today. First of all, I would like to thank the sponsors of the bill for bringing this bill forward, and also, of course, the chair for granting the bill a hearing. That's not always an automatic anymore, so that's great. Thank you. And the OBA and ICBO strongly supports efforts to increase financial literacy and support House Bill 2229. Financial literacy is certainly a cornerstone of sound financial management. Banking accounts, mortgages, loans, credit cards are all important tools for building a sound and secure future, but they are just tools. And to use them wisely and effectively takes financial education at all ages, not just simply elementary school, middle school, high school, or college, but at all ages. Many of us, I think previous testifiers mentioned, many of us were fortunate to learn these skills or background from our families. Not everybody has that opportunity, though, so having this in the school in the form of finance classes is a great idea. The chair talks about olden days. Well, I'm pretty sure I'm older than she is, and I just came across in my dad's stuff the old Bank of America blue savings book that we took every week to school. And boy, I remember hounding my parents for $1 or $2, tells you how old I am, to put in that account. So that certainly is getting financial institutions in the school is very, very helpful. And reestablishing financial education in schools would help our young people become financially literate adults. I do know that some high schools have offered it. I think you've heard that here. I had two sons that went to high school here in town that was in the high school catalog, but at least the 8 years that my sons were in high school, not each, but together, they take after their mother, so they're a little smarter. But I don't think the classes were offered. They may have been offered once in that 8 years. So, as I say, the OBA certainly believes in the importance of financial literacy, and we do work hard to help provide those educational opportunities in that area. A couple of examples are Teach Children to Save Day, which this year is April 28th, where bankers actually go into classrooms to teach young people the benefits of savings. Money Smart Week, which is 422 to 429, and that's a more broader public awareness campaign designed to help consumers better manage their financial and personal their personal finances. And that is done through the collaboration and coordinated effort of hundreds of organizations across the country, including businesses, financial institutions, schools, libraries, nonprofits, government agencies, and the media. There's also a Get Smart About Credit Day, which is the 19th of October this year. And during this event, bankers help young people get smart about credit now so they can make smart financial choices later. And then at a national level, there's the FDIC Money Smart Tool, which is out there, which is an online personal financial management program. In 2013, the OBA established the Oregon Education Foundation, and the foundation seeks to enhance educational opportunities for individuals in the area of financial literacy, banking, financial planning, and related subjects. At the end of the day, being financially literate is a key component of a sound financial future. We support the bill and the amendments that have been offered as a good step forward. There are some banks out there that have their own programs that I would encourage you to check out on their website. Some that come to mind relatively quickly to me is Umpqua Bank. Bank of America is working with Khan Academy that I think many of us are familiar with and for their program. Wells Fargo has an online, and Chase has been known in the community for giving grants to community organizations in this area. I would also add that most of these programs are at least in two different languages, both English and Spanish, and some I know are looking to expand in other languages as well. So with that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Are there any questions of Mr. Martinez? Senator Solomon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am curious, and I'm not sure if this is who to direct this question to, but I was curious on this particular bill, if this was, does this put the requirement, would a program such as what's been described that's already kind of happening in some of the schools be okayed in as a form of financial literacy? Who would I direct?
I would direct that to the drafter of the bill, Mr. Representative Wisnett?
Yeah.
Would you be able to answer that question?
Thank you. I'm sorry. It came to me after all these fantastic presentations, testimony.
Madam Chair, Representative Solomon.
If you could identify yourself for the record.
For the record, State Representative Gene was in House District 53. The bill, as it is encouraging, so okay. It's not going to, you know, there's not a check off or anything like that. It's just mainly we're putting it on, hopefully, the radar scope of superintendents
right.
That if they're not doing this, we hope you'll consider this in your schedule or something like that. So it's not a matter of checking it off or whether those what they've got going is acceptable or not. We just want as much education as we can in civics and financial literacy.
Okay. But it's out there that both of the credit unions and the banks have opportunities that they will help in the schools.
A follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I would say, too, that I deeply appreciate that and also would love the opportunity for a district, if they are offering such a program and such a connection with the credit unions and whatnot, if that could result in a, yes, this does reflect that we are working on this in some way.
Madam Chair and Representative Solomon, I'm very careful. I don't want to put any financial impact or mandate on this bill.
Yes.
That does?
It just encourages.
I like encourage, but I'm just saying that if they are doing it,
Madam
that
Chair,
some way for
that's
them
probably
to
one or two FTEs.
I believe you and me. I totally get the, I like the encouragement and not the mandate. You're preaching to this good choir member. But I'm just saying that if there was a way that we could show that some of these districts are doing it and that they would show that it would show that they're doing these programs. Maybe I'm not being clear.
Madam Chair, I'll be glad to talk to ODE and see if there's some way we can have some sort of report or something informally or something
much.
About being on
any other questions? And just for Mr. Martinez, who I'm far older than he is that we used to do things like this, and what comes to mind is my father, who always encouraged us to save, so I've been saving since I was 8, where on a talk show one morning they were going through and interviewing people about financial literacy to their children, and out of this stranger's mouth came my father's voice when they asked him the question, do you give your child an allowance? And this man goes through and says, yes, I allow them to eat my food, and I allow them to live in my house. So out of this strange man came my father's voice. Yeah. It could have been your father also.
Yes, it could. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, with that, I close the hearing on House Bill 2229, and I open up and I also close the hearing on, 2219, and I open up a public hearing on House Bill 2691. Representative Evans. Alethea, if you could read what the bill does, please.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 2691 requires that students demonstrate a proficiency in civics by a method identified through the school district. This includes completion of a civics course or a passing grade on the civics exam. The exam may be developed by the district or developed by the Oregon Department of Education. Bill takes effect on January 1st, 2021, and no revenue or fiscal impact statement have been issued.
Thank you. Representative Evans.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. I am Representative Paul Evans, representing the citizens of House District 20, which include Monmouth, Independence, West Salem, and parts of South Salem. I want to thank you for holding a public hearing on this bill. I will try not to repeat too much of what has been said about civics. That said, there are some things I think that are relevant to this bill and hopefully for us as a group. I want to start with a quote that I think gets to the heart of the matter. Franklin Roosevelt one time, who we know has certainly an unusual history, good things and bad things, but nonetheless, this one I think rings true. He said that democracy cannot succeed unless those who express their choice are prepared to choose wisely. The real safeguard of democracy, therefore, is education. I'm here to support House Bill 2691. Despite the pages, I believe there are 5 pages to try to do one thing, nonetheless, despite the size of the bill, it really tries to do one and only one thing, to require a civics proficiency of some kind as a requirement for the award of a high school diploma. The bill has 3 advantages. First, it provides a tool for encouraging greater civics education and learning opportunities. Number 2, it allows for maximum flexibility for school districts to determine a proficiency standard best suited to the circumstances of their community. And 3, it can be implemented without any additional state funds for implementation. Truth be told, this is far less of a solution than probably everybody in this room would like to have. In a perfect world, we could adopt a robust strategic investment in civics education for students in all grades of study within our public educational enterprise. But we do not live in a perfect world. We live in a time where we must find creative methods to encourage even measured progress. I believe this bill meets that standard. It addresses a well-known identified problem facing our democracy, the growing schism between groups of citizens who have wildly varying levels of civic awareness, knowledge, and skills. For all the best intentions, we have prioritized other academic disciplines too often at the expense of civics. This was not purposeful, but it does have a consequence. Sadly, our politics has become far more destructive, nasty, and counterproductive in recent times. While there has always been and will always be differences of opinion over government, our history is a story of people finding common cause to solve problems, and I believe this narrative is now at risk. I believe the lack of civics education as a priority is a driver for many of the failures of our political structures and systems. I believe people who better understand the forms and functions of government make better, more sustainable choices. And I believe whatever our personal political ideology, we are all more effective citizens when we understand the basics of how we pay for the services we seek, what the government can and cannot do, and who is charged with specific responsibilities. I want to close today with a haunting warning from our second president, a president who was saying these things at a time where our republic was not so certain. John Adams said, "Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide." Today, I ask for your help to prove Mr. Adams wrong. Thank you for your willingness to schedule a public hearing on this bill. Please let me know if there is anything I can do to help provide in terms of support or evidence for this bill.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of Representative Evans? I do have one question. If someone does not pass the test, do they not graduate my school?
Chair Doherty, great question. My intent would be that they would take the test until they did.
Okay, but if they don't, is there a possibility that of not getting a diploma?
If a school district puts the rule together in that way, yes.
Okay.
But the goal here is, because we all know we don't have much money, for a school district to either recognize programs that already exist, and again, a test, maybe we used to have the word test, we turn that out for proficiency. Mm-hmm. So a proficiency could be a class discussion where everybody was involved. A proficiency could be taking a test that teachers agree upon. A proficiency could be being involved in YMCA Youth in Government or some other type of civic activity. The point is, if we can get a marker on the board so that school districts at least acknowledge that there has to be a requirement, then over time, hopefully, when we have more resources, we can be a little more clear. And I want to emphasize, there's some really good curriculum already developed that many school districts already provide. Mm-hmm. But in those districts that are pushed for any number of factors on expectations, sometimes that curriculum just isn't delivered in sufficient quantity.
Thank you. Representative Solomon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious, are you thinking just in the high school years that this would, so somewhere between?
Chair Doherty, Representative Solomon, I am thinking that whatever the school district thinks best. I truly believe in local control, and I think that it is the school district that awards the diploma, and the school district can determine in concert with their faculty what's the best representation for what they can do.
Thank you.
Follow up. Thank you. Because I was also thinking about there are students that take opportunities that happen over the summer, such as Girls State and Boys State.
Yes.
So,
yes.
I just wonder if somehow those would all
yes.
be able to.
I'm looking for a marker.
Hey, any other questions?
Well, just to follow up on that last comment, what I liked about the wording in this particular bill was that it really did offer the opportunity for a wide variety. The classes, there are history classes, there are speech classes, there are journalism classes, there are a lot of different classes that actually have units or have actual experiences or discussions that would relate to that. Also, the speech and debate competition, just like the Girls and Boys State, they do that all the time. And so I think that the language itself is really good as far as providing encouragement to be creative and look at what you've already got, which would cause those costs to be lower or minimal. But I thank you again, because I do believe that civic education is really important and that we have to provide that if we want folks to be able to deal with problem solving and a lot of the other things that we say are good critical thinking devices. So I also appreciate your bill.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, Representative Evans, thank you very much. We had three people signed up, Trish Garner, Peter Fitzgerald, and Barbara Rost. Okay. Yes. I don't see Mr. Fitzgerald here. Oh, did you decide not to testify? He's not here. So, please, go ahead. Make sure you identify yourself for the record.
Shall do. Chairman Daugherty and members of the committee, my name is Trish Garner. I represent AUW of Oregon, which hopefully I don't have to tell you at some point is the American Association of University Women. As we heard today, I doubt that any of you would oppose the fact that we should have civics in schools. As I read your biographies and so on, there's a lot of accumulated teaching experience and dedication to developing community. Maybe some of you even remember that at one time, civics was what schooling was all about. That was it, and everything fell from there. I think we have something of an inverse hierarchy at this point. It's also a situation that we operate under at this point is that if it's not mandated, it doesn't happen. And I'm sure you find that as unfortunate as I do. I just wanted to briefly say kind of where are we? We can certainly talk about our personal anecdotes of why we believe civics isn't being honored in our communities. But a 2016 survey conducted by the Annenberg Public Policy Center of the University of Pennsylvania reported that only one quarter of Americans can name all three branches of government. Now, you've probably heard statistics such as this, but that report also noted a statistically significant decline since 2011, when instead of one quarter, it was 38%. A study by the Center for Information on Research on Civil Learning and Engagement at Tufts University has found 21 states require a state-designated social studies test, but that's a decrease from 2001 when 34 did. So unfortunately, I understand when we're using words like requirement and mandate and funding that there are some genuine other concerns that enter the mix. But I get concerned with statistics such as this, that frankly, when people voted for you, did they really know what they were voting for? Did they really know the job that you were going to be undertaking as you assumed office? As I understand it, of Oregon's high schools, 355, 266 provide courses identified as civics and government. So to the extent that there is some flexibility, at least those have a rather specific identified program in civics and government. It also, I understand that Oregon does have drafted a state assessment in social sciences that is optional for districts to use, but it's not as if there's a whole, testing mechanism that has to, have a workforce and testing and so on. I would imagine, again, that the primary objection here is requirement and, down the road, is there any funding? But I would really submit that this argument misses the point, and perhaps I'm reiterating Representative Evans' point about making a marker. If civics proficiency doesn't enter the list of required items, along with language arts, science, math, etc., then it just won't make it anywhere. It may very well be that even when a legislature says something's required, I hesitate to say this, but sometimes it doesn't really actually happen. But if civics proficiency doesn't even make it to the list of something that's required, then in our environment of, if it's not mandated, it doesn't happen, it's just not going to happen. Now more than ever, how can our democratic institutions survive if our citizens can't formulate questions, have the tools to assess and investigate the information cascading upon them from all sides, and act upon what they have discovered? I ask you to vote positively to this bill, House Bill 2691, and I thank you so much for your attention.
Hey, thank you. Ms. Rose.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Barbara Rost, and I'm the program director at Classroom Law Project. Classroom Law Project is a nonprofit organization here in Oregon dedicated to K-12 civic education. We're used throughout the state of Oregon, and we're well known by our colleagues throughout the country. I really appreciate the opportunity to add my voice to the chorus for increased civic education. I'm pleased to discuss this bill because it invites discussion about what constitutes quality civic education and how to get more of it in our Oregon classrooms. House Bill 2691 calls for mandatory demonstration of proficiency in civics by students in order to graduate. We at Classroom Law Project laud the idea behind that. We think that we can all agree that we want youth to understand how government works and how to use their voice in government. We urge this committee to carefully consider whether a mandated demonstration of proficiency will produce the desired goals. Classroom Law Project raises this concern in light of the system as it currently exists. We have state standards. Those standards are mandatory. We have really good standards in civics and in government. Yet, many claim that we're not yielding the results in knowledge and skills in civics and government that we want. One might ask, if they're not mandatory, how and why do students lack the basic knowledge in civics when they graduate? How does this happen? Many would claim that we're not yielding the knowledge and skills, and the committee would urge us to consider how or if House Bill 2691 will yield a different result than what we have today. Consider the infrastructure, the existing infrastructure that we have. Where will districts have what they need to administer such a proficiency? Does the infrastructure exist? Current circumstances suggest no, because most curriculum and instruction experts in social studies have been let go. Civics and government has languished for so long that I'm not sure the existing infrastructure exists to create that proficiency in some of our districts. Now, there are some districts that are great. That's acknowledged, but not all of them are there. I would like to suggest there are better ways to accomplish the goals in this bill. I urge that this committee revisit the work done by this legislature's task force on civics and financial education. I was a member of that task force. It was back in 2008. Among the recommendations that were made were increased teacher professional development. And I'd ask you to think about that for just a moment, the professional development piece. In math, the multiplication tables that we learned in grade school haven't changed. But the laws have. Current events cause the Constitution to be reinterpreted differently all the time. The state constitution, lots of folks don't know we have a state constitution, the state constitution as well as the federal constitution. I would suggest that in these times, maybe especially these times, ongoing professional development for teachers could not be more important. So to recap, I say on behalf of Classroom Law Project, yes to civics education, but I would ask that the committee carefully and deliberately and critically think of how we get there.
Okay, fine, thank you. Any questions of this panel? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank
and just
you.
Kind of for your information, we do have information on OLIS that actually shows all of the curriculum and the expectations, the core standards for civics. And it starts at kindergarten, it goes all the way through 12th. And also to look at what the current law reads, which is 329.4 05 is that it already provides for rigorous academic content standards, which are listed in the information that you have on OLIS, in English, history, geography, economics, civics, physical education, health, arts, and world languages. And so that already is currently in the law to have physics, civics. I just had a physics flashback. And so I just wanted to make sure that people do know that it's already in the statute.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to add that there is a letter that was brought by folks who were going to testify, but they have to get to another event. They were involved with the YMCA Youth in Government and in support of the bill. It'll be on OLIS, but it's not there yet, but it will be.
So anyway, so just for your information, they've got all that on OLIS. Okay, any other comments, questions? Okay, with that, I close the public hearing on House Bill.
Madam?
Do we have anybody? Oh, wait.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Actually, he didn't leave.
Fitzgerald, he was on the list.
Pardon?
The gentleman Fitzgerald was on
the list. Oh, and Mr. Fitzgerald?
No.
Yes.
No, I think it's the YMCA.
We had him down to testify, but when I called.
This is a different person.
Oh, okay. Anybody else not signed up that wants to speak on this bill? Okay. And make sure we have your name because we need it for the record. That's not Mr. Fitzgerald.
No, sorry about that.
Thank you very much.
Representatives, my name is Carl Garner. I am a teacher at McKay High School here in Salem, and just had the opportunity this weekend to be a participant in the YMCA Youth in Government program. I got to use this magnificent building. And it's an amazing process to watch students. We had students from 5 high schools, which is very sad. We used to have around 15 high schools, and now we're down to 5 that participate. But they run a mock legislative session where they work together as partners to come up with an idea that they think should be either a new law or a change to an existing law. They then have to rally support of their peers in committees and then on the floor of the House and the Senate in order to get that measure passed. Then it goes to their elected youth governor, mm-hmm. who can either sign that or veto it. We had a measure that was vetoed, and they tried to do an override of the governor's veto. It failed, but it was a fascinating process to watch them work together to try and convince people to see their point of view. And every year, as I've done this is my 15th year being involved with this program. And it is absolutely amazing to walk away, and they do not want to leave the Capitol because they have such a deep appreciation for the process of democracy and the opportunity to have their voices heard. We see this as an excellent opportunity for schools to participate to meet that civics requirement because it's a great way for students to have hands-on experience that they walk away changed forever. It was interesting, as we were walking through the Capitol Friday afternoon, we met 4 people who were participants in the Youth in Government program who are now either staffers or lobbyists in this building. It has long-lasting impacts. And so I'm very appreciative of the opportunity to be a part of that program and support a measure that will allow students opportunities to do such things. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you very much for testifying. Okay, anybody else? Okay, with that, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2691. And anything else for the good of the order? Again, on Wednesday, we'll be here in Room C. Okay, with that, I adjourn the House Committee here in Room C. Okay, with that, I adjourn.